Karen, here you go.
Thank you again, and I just want to say that I am absolutely astonished by how many people are here at this in the States. This would be most people start coming after lunch, or they straggle in during the afternoon, and it's just so great all the dedication that's here. It makes me feel really good. Although I was kind of thought the morning slots would be great for me because there wouldn't be that many people here. So, all right, I've got questions. All right, let me see. I'm going to do this till noon, and then we're going to have lunch. And I'll try to do I'll try to have every question be somewhat unique. This is great. If you don't know exactly what your higher power is, but do have a willingness to believe in a higher power, how can you make a decision to turn yourself over to something unless you have a clear perception of that higher power? A conundrum. This is exactly the position that I found myself in early in my sobriety. And I think that what I have experienced is that there is a certain amount of faith that is blind faith that has to come into play here. And I think that for many of us, the first way that we experience a higher power is through our sponsor. And then there's a moment that is equally important when we realize that sponsor isn't the higher power or the way that we have to get to the higher power. I had that with my sponsor. I think I've used my sponsor's higher power for probably the first year, maybe even longer. And then I realized that I was being invited to have my own. And that was enough. You know, there were so many times in my early sobriety, and the ABCs that I talked about earlier kind of addressed this too. There were so many times in my early sobriety when I had to accept a partial success with a concept. Because what I wanted, and it sounds like this question it sounds like it's from someone who I could identify with really a lot. What I wanted was to get it right. You know, I thought if I got it right, then I could go on. So you do a perfect step one, a perfect step three, you just nail step two, and then you nail step three, and then you do a fourth step where, you know, it's talked about in meetings for years as the perfect example of the fourth step. Now, Karen's fourth step was a great fourth step. And, you know, the fifth step, your sponsor, you know, has a spiritual experience while you're doing it, you know, and the truth is that's not usually how it happens. It's except for step one, we have to accept. And I think it's part of becoming sober and kind of beginning to understand how life works. We have to accept that, you know, there is, we only are going to be able to know what we know. You know, we're only there to do what we're there to do at the moment and know what we need to know at the moment. And that when it's enough, you know, that it'll be enough, that what I know right now is enough for right now, you know. And I don't know. Hopefully that helps. All right. What is the best way for a sponsor to find out if a sponsee is truly ready and serious about continuing into the fourth step? There's two really tried and true methods, I think. This one's easy. This is kind of hard, cold fact. Ask them to do the third step with you. If they're willing to get down on their knees with you and say the third step prayer, they're probably ready. So, because that's awfully embarrassing, you know. And if somebody fairly new can do that, they can do just about anything, believe me. The other thing to do is tell them to do the fourth step and see if they do it, you know. When you go back to step one, what are you powerless over if you haven't taken a drink or a drug for some time? Boy, that's a great question. I come from a big AA community. Minneapolis, St. Paul. The Twin Cities are really active AA. Very lots of meetings, lots of big book, lots of people, lots of. I mean, it's a great place to be sober, but you know they it's also been it's been around for a while, so it's not it, they don't. What I see here is so much passion, and it's so cool. I wish I could take a little piece of this and bring it back to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and say, you know, look, you can still be this excited about all of this. But what I hear people talk about in my meetings, and I kind of agree with this and kind of don't, is taking the concept of powerlessness and beginning to apply it to the 99.9% of life that I'm really powerless over. You know, my son. I can try to be a good parent, but you know I'm not in his head. I can't, and it becomes increasingly clear to me the older he gets that my job's pretty much done. You know, if I haven't accomplished it by now, it's too late. You know, and I'm powerless over my boss and my job and my coworkers and all of you and virtually everyone. So there's that. And I kind of agree with that, but I always have to remember that sort of powerlessness is just a kind of a pale shadow over the powerlessness that I still have over alcohol. I mean, that is still, like I said, as real of a fact for me today as it was 15 years ago. And I used to get a little irritated when people would talk about being just one drink away from a drunk. And they would, you know, have lots and lots of time, and I knew that they were not experiencing difficulties staying sober. And I'd think, you know, that's surely we've advanced beyond that point. But the truth is, what I believe now for myself is I haven't, and I won't, and I never will. Now that powerlessness might come in the form of making a decision that death is preferable to growth, which is something I was at one time kind of poised on the brink of. You know, it's alcohol. It's the same kind of powerlessness. I would never discount my own powerlessness over alcohol and drugs. But there are an awful lot of areas in my life that I can apply that principle to. So, this is the same one. Okay. That's kind of the same one too. I had been interrupted too many times on my way to the bottom. I think he's quoting something I said. When to help alcoholics and when to let them finish to get to their bottom. Great question. And I don't know. I mean, the only answer that I can give to this is there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that I have made many mistakes in this area, and I'll make many more. You know, that I have chased people out of crack houses. I have chased people down the street. I have dragged people into detoxes. You know, I've done all of those things. And I've let people go who I may have been able to help. You know, I've made mistakes on both sides. What I can say, and all I can say that's the kind of the common thread through all of that is that I've always tried to be willing. But willingness is better if I'm staying spiritually fit myself. Then I can be willing and maybe informed by my higher power, you know, and willing and being willing and kind of having the clarity of thinking to know when it's the moment to step in or when it's your moment to step in is pretty cool. And I've had that experience, you know. So what I try to do now is I'm available. I try to stay available. I try to answer the phone. I try to let people know that I'm in AA. I try to be connected, and then I also try to stay connected to my own God and the daily rituals that keep me close to Him. The prayer, the meditation, the 12-step work, all of that. And it is my sincere experience that if I do that, I am clearer, you know, in some way. I also have more faith that I'm going to know when to step in. Because we make a lot of mistakes in this area, and I want somebody to have their experience. I never want to deny anybody their experience. It's all that they've got, you know. So, but I also want to be there when it's my turn to do something. I hope I'm answering some of these. If you have recovered from alcoholism through the steps, but by accident take a drink, do you believe the physical allergy would occur? We'll let that one, yeah. Yes, I do. I absolutely believe that with all my heart. And I do think I have known several people who have accidentally taken drinks. And they're fine. You know, they didn't start foaming at the mouth, bad choice of words, or, tear into the nearest bar and, you know, go on a 3-week bender or anything like that. They sincerely accidentally took a drink and they took the right actions. They immediately talked to people about it. They immediately reengaged in their AA life and I don't think that's the best we can do under those circumstances. But when they say, as I understand it, I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, but the reason I've recovered is because I have a new mind. I don't have a new body. I never will. You know, it's impossible for me to do that. And I frankly don't believe even if there were a pill that it would really have the desired effect, you know, if there was some kind of magic cure for it that would make the difference that it would need to change me into a non-alcoholic. So I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The reason I've recovered is because I've got a new mind. If I took a drink and the phenomenon of craving kicked in, I would still have to have the same experience that I had 15 years ago. I'd like to think that in that event, my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous would would get me through that period to make sure that I didn't that I could overcome it, you know, with their help. So, what are you doing? Ah, this is interesting. What do you do when you go back to the first step? What do you mean by going back? How do you know it's necessary? For how long do you dwell there? Ooh, that's deep. Well, going back, that's interesting because that's probably not the right choice of words. I mean, the 12th step tells us that, you know, we practice these principles in all our affairs. I don't think they just mean the principles in 4 through 10 or even in 2 through 10. You know, I think they mean all of them. So it isn't really back. You know, it's just forward. If the 12 steps are a gateway, then I'm always kind of moving forward. So, but, you know, if you looked at it like a circle, then I guess it would be back. So that you're very right about that, whoever noticed that. That's probably not the right choice of words. What I did mean and what has been necessary for me is to occasionally readdress the steps and member. Earl and I were just talking about this on the break. There was one point in my sobriety where my sponsor made me buy a new book because I was reading the book, you know, all the time, as I always have tried to. But I was reading it as a sponsor and as a longtime member, and I was reading through my own experience and through all the notes, through all the highlighting, through all the margin notes, through everything that I had experienced. And I was reading it as an old friend, you know, and probably more importantly, as somebody who was using that experience to carry the message to other people, which will, you know, is always my job. But I wasn't reading it as a member necessarily. And as crazy as it sounds, and many of the things my sponsor tells me sound pretty darn crazy, which is how I always know they're right, by the way. I went and got a new book and started reading it as if I had never seen it before. And that's probably what I mean by going back. How do I know when it's necessary? Usually somebody else tells me. I would never, you know, I would probably never come to that conclusion on my own. And usually they've been telling me for quite some time. And, you know, and all of a sudden it starts to echo into that place in the back of my head where I do all my real thinking. And that's how I know. And how long do I stay there? I guess only as long as it takes. I'm also not one to encourage anyone to spend a ton of time on anyone during a formal process of going through the steps, to spend a lot of time on any one step. You know, I know people who have taken huge chunks of their lives out to write a fourth step, you know, where, you know, it becomes a project of incredible proportion. And I would never recommend to anyone I work with to do that, you know. Same with 8 and 9. You know, it's, if you look at the experience of the early members, they would bang through this stuff in a couple of weeks, you know, as quick as they could. And I, you know, I do think there are some ongoing aspects to some of the steps, but I should be always looking for the next action. And there are so many clues in the book that is supposed to be a fairly fast track. You know, it's, they'll say immediately we launched into a course of vigorous action. You know, now, you know, seventh step, a paragraph, boom, you're an 8. You know, not, gee, I'm going to sit around and think about step 5 for a few months and kind of bask in the glow of the, you know, the warmth of the fellowship for a while and then do 8 and 9. You know, it's, so I think, again, probably I know how long to dwell there because somebody tells me, but it's never that long. I think, what, is it noon? Okay, I'll do one more. Let me see if I've got something that hasn't been, what does, Okay. I will try. And if anybody wants to ask me these one-to-one that are left, please feel free. Or I'll give out my email. You can ask me anonymously, whatever. I like this one just because it's kind of funny, and we might as well end on a kind of a light note. What does an alcoholic mean when he says it's God's will that he drink again? I see, wasn't that funny? I think, you know, in all seriousness, this is one of the, this just goes to show you how cunning, baffling, and powerful alcoholism is. It's one of those, I have heard this before, you know, not in so many words, but pretty much, basically. And it's one of the things that shows me how deep the denial runs in alcoholism, how profoundly it impacts us, how cunning it is, how powerful it is, and how much it can override, you know, all of the good thinking, you know, that we have. So, I mean, I think that's what it means. It just means, boy, he's come up with kind of the ultimate, answer to the question of not being ready, you know. So I'd say if someone said to me that it was God's will, I would probably say, let me know how it works out, you know. And that's about it. Good luck. Good luck with that. And I don't know. I mean, I wish we could make people be ready when they should be ready. I wish somebody could have made me ready when I should have been ready, but I was ready when I was ready. And as it turns out, I think that one of the reasons that we have so many different experiences with this and there are so many variations to the alcoholic story is because there are so many people that need to hear this. And they often need to have an experience that is similar to their own presented to them. So it's important that we all have such different experience, you know. So I guess that's it. And like I said, anybody who wants to talk to me about any of this stuff anytime this weekend or in the future, please feel free. I'll give you my email or phone number or whatever. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.